to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
So Shinshu's been talking about patience, lecturing on that chapter in Shantideva on patience. And I thought today I would talk about equanimity. So, last Thursday morning, actually from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m., I sat in the Watsonville City Council chamber listening to the SCRTCCTC something anyway, the Transportation Board, talking about whether they're going to put a train through our town, the towns. And since Shinshu and I live right on the railroad tracks, I had a personal interest in this. When we first moved in, there were freight trains that went by a few times a week. It was kind of sweet, you know, good wave. No problem whatsoever. And then they put in the Polar Express, which was rather like having all of the reindeers in our living room every couple of hours. The house would shake, and ooh, 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 you know. And sometimes they'd take the trains by in the middle of the night and wake us up. Giant, like three times the size of the little freight trains. That, not little, but, you know, the freight trains went by. So I was pretty interested in what was going to happen, and I've been keeping track of this for actually several years now. And I had a pretty strong opinion that I really didn't want a giant diesel engine running through our bedroom. And so I've been keeping up and listening to the various positions, trying to sort out what was real and what was best. And I had pretty much come down on the side that we should have a trail. Wouldn't that be lovely? To have a trail in our backyard, be able to just walk right out the back fence and lots of people riding their bikes and walking, and it would be beautiful and birds would be happy. The information that I was getting seemed like there was no reason for that not to happen. So I had formed a pretty strong opinion about that. And I don't know, some of you may know this, but in my youth I was quite political and quite angry and quite sure of everything. So I have that kind of thread that runs through my being. You know, I'm here to tell you practice works. I'm not as not nearly as unconscious, let's say, as I used to be. But it's still there. And so I got there and I saw some of the characters had the same names as when I was active in the 70s. And some of them were the same people as when I was active in the 70s, and I thought, there's something a little screwy about this picture. But I was very grateful to see Dodi there. We sat next to each other. And then, you know, the mucky muck started talking, and that was fine. And they had clearly different opinions. And then the people started talking. The people got up. Lots of them. It was standing room only. In fact, it was, they had a separate thing out in the hallway. And I heard things that I hadn't heard before. I heard about the businesses in Watsonville and the way they needed freight. I heard about the jobs that would be lost if they didn't have a train. I heard only English spoken until finally one man got up and started speaking Spanish. And both Dodie and I broke out. It's like, finally, you know, finally, this huge portion of the population of our county, somebody is saying something that speaks from their language. And I watched some of the operators for the opinion that I came with, trying to manipulate the process. It was fascinating. It was really, really interesting, and I could feel my perspective change. I could feel that when I listened to people, I got a fuller picture. And when the people who were making the decisions listened to one another, they got a fuller picture. And some of them clearly had come with an idea, and it was unassailable, you know? They had made up their minds. I think one of them, whose name I will not say, probably made up his mind in 1980. So it was a fairly gray room, except for one young man who identified himself as 25. And he just said, you know, y'all are looking backwards. Like you're stuck in the past. So the reason I'm telling you this story is because I'm going to talk about equanimity. And the opportunities for equanimity and inclusivity and actually looking at your own position. I still don't want a diesel train going through my bedroom. I still hope that they don't decide to run a commuter train up and down the coast. I personally think it's a boondoggle. But the point is, if I had not gone and listened, I would not have known about the very important needs of people who are mostly silenced and have for decades been on the short end of the stick in this county. So how do we cultivate the capacity to listen, to be still, to hear? How do we cultivate that and not just react, not just say, well, I know. And I think equanimity is one way of talking about this. So there are, in the Buddha Dharma, different ways of talking about how we cultivate our minds. And one of them is called the Brahmaviharas, or the divine abodes, or sublime states. And there are these four. The first one, and these would be familiar to you probably, the first one is metta, or maitri, which is loving kindness. The second is karuna, compassion. The third is, and this one isn't, I think, not an accident that it's not talked about so much, mudita, sympathetic joy, which basically means if you're standing in line at the movie theater for this movie that you've been waiting for 3 months to come out, and you just can't wait to see it, like, I don't know, the latest Star Wars movie or something, and the person in front of you gets the last ticket, that you feel joy for them. Right? That's mudita, sympathetic joy. fourth is equanimity, and as I'll mention, it's usually translated as upekkha. I'll talk a little bit about, there's actually two aspects to it. Metta is often described as feelings of a mother is assumed, I would say assumed to have for her child. They usually say what feelings a mother has for her child, but I think we all know that that's not necessarily always true. Karuna is often described traditionally as what a mother has for a sick child. Mudita, what a mother has for child successes. And upekkha, or equanimity, is like a grandmother who, because of her experience raising children, has a wider view of the everyday ups and downs of parenting. Not so caught in the drama. There's this basis of experience, and basis of stability, which facilitates a certain kind of care. So all of these qualities are naturally present in our minds, and we can also cultivate them through practice, both formal, so you can actually sit down and do formal practices to cultivate these states of mind, or recalling ourselves to them when we sit in the Watsonville City Council, for example, meeting. Day to day, you know, somebody's driving in front of you, going really slow, anything. Somebody gets a promotion that you wanted, whatever. You can cultivate these states of mind in our everyday life. And as we cultivate them, we see the world more clearly. We're more apt to see things as they actually are. And we grow in our capacity both to act both internally and externally, effectively, and with care and calmness. So in the Pali Canon, a person mature in these virtues is said to identify themselves with all. Identifying themselves with all, they pervade the entire universe with all embracing kindness, with compassion, with altruistic joy, with equanimity, with a heart grown wide, deep, boundless, and free from wrath and anger. Okay, so a heart grown wide, deep, boundless, free from wrath and anger. So free from the afflictive states, capable of embracing all. Equanimity, this English word, I looked it up, is equus, meaning equal, animus, meaning mind, but also not just the thinking mind, but the sense of consciousness, or what we might call soul. It also means courage, which is interesting. Equilibrium is balance, right? An equilibrist, which was new to me, is someone who balances himself or herself in unnatural positions at hazardous moments. You can think of somebody on a higher wire, right? And equilateral, of course, is having equal sides. So this is some of the sense of equanimity. This is described in the Pali Canon as an attitude of even-mindedness in the face of every sort of experience, pleasure, pain, fear, distress. A mind of equanimity is said to be abundant, exalted, immeasurable, and without ill will. There's a mind of deep and a heart of deep tranquility. So these two aspects are upekka, which means to look over, to have a vast view. So it's sometimes described as like standing on a mountaintop or a place with a broad, wide view. We can think of this in terms of past, present, and future too. So we view things as they are now, but we also have a vision for the future and a responsibility for the future. What actually is a broader view besides what's going to fit for us in this particular time? Also, it's like when water calms down, you can see clearly through the water, right? You can see what's going on. You can see the little fishies. Another translation of equanimity, and I may not be pronouncing this correctly. My Pali is not, you know. Tatra mahi jatata. Tatra mahi jatata. Tatra means there. Maji means middle. And tata means to stand or to pose. So this is to stand in balance. To remain centered. In this case, it's a sense of strong, flexible, centered stance from which we can move like a dancer. In other words, your core strength, we talk about this core strength, is quite solid. And so there's flexibility, there's movement. One of the things that's interesting about this is, of course, we can only stand with that kind of flexibility and movement if we're stable on the ground, right? It's very difficult to have flexibility and to feel that kind of grounded flexibility if you feel like you're floating in midair. So this equanimity is based in our sense of connection, our sense of being on the ground. With this sense, we have the ability to stay still and be present or respond in whatever manner is needed. Each of these four Brahma Viharas have what in the Tibetan tradition called a near and a far enemy. The far enemy of equanimity is aversion and or greed. So being caught by what we like or dislike, approving or disapproving, passion, hatred, right? Not thinking clearly, you're just reacting. That's not equanimity. And it destroys our mind, actually. The near enemy of equanimity is indifference. So sometimes this is a mistake, equanimity. People feel like it's like putting a manhole cover on your passions. But that's not what it's about. It's not indifference. It's not blandness or dullness. It's being actually awake and engaged with a rich sense of stability. So it's not heartless or cold. It doesn't express emotional dryness or hollowness. It arises from a full understanding, seeing things deeply and truly. In other words, seeing our complete interconnectedness. If a decision were made about the train that it benefited me in the short term, but destroyed the livelihoods of 400 people in Watsonville, that would not be benefit to me, right? So when we see more broadly, and we have to stop and listen to see more broadly, when we see more broadly, we actually uncover what's good for us more clearly, right? Does this make sense? This takes courage sometimes. We don't want to look beyond our own needs. You know, we have to look around. Metta, or loving kindness, is often described as a starting point for the development of the Brahmaviharas, and this is true. Without a kind of fundamental sense of kindness in our minds, we can't see things. We won't see things because it's too difficult. If we don't bring kindness to our awareness, we'll just avert. So having a kind mind, as Dogen Zenji tells us, is essential. It is a starting point. But equanimity is the basis for our maturation. Loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy bind us to others. They are ways that we understand our relationship. But if we focus on them without the leavening action of equanimity, they can become a distorted versions of themselves and constrict us rather than free us. Loving kindness can be kind of a greedy attachment motivated by can be kind of sappy, right? One of my teachers talked about the tyranny of niceness. Kindness and niceness are not necessarily the same thing. And if we live on the tyranny of niceness, we're like, oh, I don't want to say anything. You've got to be nice here. That's not kindness. In Zen, we talk about grandmotherly kindness, which is like, get a grip. Right? That can be kindness. Compassion can turn into overwhelm and consuming grief. So, we say, open your heart, open your heart, open your heart. Okay, that's good. But without the stability of equanimity, we can be swamped. We can grieve. We can be heartbroken. And then how much good are we doing? Sympathetic joy can become a kind of clueless, unbalanced excitement. Yokity, yokity, yokity. Kind of like, if this person in front of you gets this ticket, and you go, oh, good for you. But you're feeling, excuse me, you son of a bitch, you just got the last ticket. Right? And you don't have equanimity, you can't actually have all of the feelings that you have and connect with something deeper. If I pretended that I'm just fine, I'm happy to have a diesel train running through my bedroom, that would not be my contribution to the whole, right? It wouldn't represent the whole. It would be just this nicey-nice thing, this clueless, oh, we're all, yeah. You get it. So we have to have this deep commitment to settling down and seeing what's true for all of us. Settling down and feeling that stability of even-mindedness. It allows us to create effective boundaries. It allows us to act effectively. It allows us to also let go when it's time to let go. Without it, these other dimensions of us can swing from extremes. So we can swing from care to cruelty, from some kind of sense of connection to jealousy. We can just be all over the map, bouncing off of one thing to another. Also, the relationship of these are reciprocal. So there's a kind of mutual tempering that happens. So loving kindness imbues equanimity with a sense of care that helps you remain calm. And equanimity tempers the endless energy of loving kindness. Compassion keeps equanimity from becoming indifference. And equanimity keeps compassion from descending into sadness. It brings patience and wisdom and boundaries to this open heart. Sympathetic joy gives to equanimity a good-natured sense of connection. You know, there's joy. Joy is there, right? And equanimity supports a balanced sense of joy and appreciation. So in all of this, equanimity functions to balance, to help articulate boundaries, support calmness, a sense of proportion. It guards us from dissipating our energy, from going astray into over-emotionality. Loving kindness, compassion, and sympathetic joy are vulnerable in a way without equanimity. And equanimity alone can become dry. So, rooted in insight, equanimity becomes a guiding and restraining principle. There's nothing wrong with restraint. That's the first thing we practice, right? We're activated in some way. We want to pop off at somebody. And the first thing we do is say, okay, count to 10, right? Let's think, restrain, reflect. And all of these things work together to ripen and mature ourselves. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, equanimity is therefore the sublime state that crowns the other three and lets them work in harmony with each other. It helps the other three stay in the middle path. So we can think of equanimity as providing this rich, solid, sound basis. It provides us with a view. Like from a mountaintop, we can see the whole county, not just our backyard, right? And also the kind of core strength to move in a way that has confidence and stability to it. As we see this bigger picture, our habitual prejudices and delusions come to the fore, right? We have the opportunity to do something that might actually help this situation and not just get into this fractious who gets to win this debate. It enhances our perspective on things so that when we do get involved, we get involved appropriately. And we have the capacity to let go with intelligence. We know when to quit. I think one of the central gifts of equanimity is that it supports a sense of self-acceptance, self-respect. We see ourselves clearly. At least some of the time, we see a situation more clearly. We see others more clearly. We understand our faults, our difficulties, our needs, our gifts. We can act with strength, calmly and without prejudice. We can act in a way that actually supports ourselves in the Dharma and other people. So, without equanimity, it is, I think, virtually impossible to sit in a room with a bunch of people who very much care and whose lives are going to be greatly impacted by a choice that's being made. and to really listen. Because if we don't have some access to equanimity, and we don't practice equanimity in an active way, then we've already decided, and we're not listening anymore. We're not caring anymore. We don't have the access also to the ability to let go, and to do so intelligently, with regard for ourselves as well as others. So as we sit in Zazen, we have the opportunity to develop a stable posture. So I've been having more trouble with my right hip, so I have to prop up my knee a little more than I used to. I can't just say, oh, well, I don't want to do that. But if I'm going to maintain stability, I need to do that kind of thing. What is it that you have to do to deepen the sense of connection, intimacy with yourself, stability both physical, mental, emotional, and spiritually? So there's a... Let's see what time we've got. There's seven virtues. And maybe I'll talk about this more another time, because it's 10 o'clock, but I'm just going to run down the list. Seven virtues that support equanimity. Integrity. Do you actually have a moral basis for what you do? And do you feel yourself that is in alignment with that? Do you maintain integrity? Groundedness in your practice. It's called shraddha, faith, confidence. You know, what are you resting on in your life? A well-developed mind. Cultivate your mind, your awareness. A sense of well-being. Do you attend to your well-being? Or do you forget about it? Wisdom. Seeing clearly the true nature of things. Insight. And freedom. So these things, attending to these virtues supports equanimity, and equanimity supports these virtues. Everything we do in our practice is related to everything else in our life. Right? Zazen doesn't just happen when we sit here. Stability doesn't just happen when we sit on our cushions. Kindness comes from stability. Compassion comes from kindness and stability. Compassion allows us to find stability. Sympathetic joy is connected to all of these. All of these ways of looking at our lives and our practice are connected together. And the fruit is, what do we do when the diesel engine is going through our backyard? What do we do when we hear about these things? How is it when you're driving? How is it when you're dealing with difficult emotional situations? What actually happens? And looking at our lives and seeing what happens tells us where we need to work. And when we work and attend, then we can see the fruit of it. Thank you.